Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Don't miss out on amazing end-of-sale savings on bedding, curtains and more. Available now in-store or at harrycurry.com.
You heard it on the news there, because it's a life-saving screening service that's invaluable to so many women and families up and down the country. But when we do hear of missed targets in breast check, it is a cause of concern for obvious reasons. Joanne, good afternoon to you.
Hi Cormac, how are you?
You're very welcome to the programme. I'm well. Breast check.
Thank you.
You have obvious questions as a result of the news this morning, is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. So I contacted RTÉ on foot of hearing Fiona Murphy speak this morning in relation to the missed targets and also in relation to the online breast check register. So I suppose, look, I'm of an age. I turned 50 in January and I self-registered with breast check at the time. I heard or read somewhere, if you're organising health checks, do everything around your birthday and you won't forget it.
Good idea.
So I did that in January and I thought no more of it. When you register, you put in your information, your name, your address, your email, your phone number, your date of birth and your PPS number. So you upload all that. And you get a message and it says, thank you for completing the form. Mm-hmm. So I thought no more of it, Cormac, and off I went. And I actually had a separate private follow-up appointment at the start of June based on a previous private referral. I'm fortunate enough that I have private healthcare and it does cover it. So I went for that. And as I was leaving, the technician said, you can hop over to breast check from now.
Yeah, so can I jump in there because the line broke just momentarily. So you went to your private appointment in June, Joanne, and the technician said to you?
So the technician said to me, Cormac, she said, you're 50 now, so you can hop over to the public system if you so wish, obviously depending on the results of this scan. And I said, fine, no bother. He said, we'll see. So she advised, take whichever appointment comes first. So I said, fine, no problem. So I did say I had registered. So she said, did you hear anything? And I said, no, actually, I haven't. So at that stage, it was on my mind. And I suppose, look, no more than anybody else in the country, we've all lost someone to cancer, whether it be breast or whatever. So I said to her, I must check. So I checked online in June and it said, you're not found on our database.
Not found.
So I said, fine.
But I thought you said in January that you had uploaded your details.
In January, I uploaded my information and I got the message saying, thank you for completing the form. And then in June, when I checked, and I think it was middle of June, 14th of June, I said, we did not find you in our database. And I thought, that's a bit odd. So then I re-registered and I checked it a few days later. And again, it said, we did not find you in our database. And I suppose there was like a dog with a bone at this stage. So I said, I'll register on the laptop because I had previously done it on my mobile. So maybe it's, sometimes you're better to do something on an actual computer. So I did that and I gave it a couple of days again. And at the end of the month, it was still giving me the message that we did not find you on our database.
By the end of June.
I rang breast check at the end of June and I outlined my concerns. So the lady I spoke to asked me, had I received a letter to say that I was registered? And I said, at no instance had I received a letter. But I did say to her at that stage, it doesn't say that anywhere that you're subject to receipt of a letter that you have actually been registered. See, there's no real way to verify. So I did say to her, no, I hadn't received a letter. I also told her, Cormac, that I didn't need a mammogram, that thankfully my most recent scan had been clear. And she said, and I explained what had happened with the online. Mm-hmm. And she said, well, don't worry about that now. I'll register you here.
Okay.
So I said, fine, thank you. But is there anyone I can speak to directly in relation to my concerns that I had thought I was registered in January and now it's June and now I'm on the phone having this conversation.
Yeah. And what was the response?
She said she'd pass it on.
Okay.
I'll pass that on. Okay. So I said, fine. So the following day, I got a text message. To be fair, I did get a text message the following day with an appointment for a mammogram the following Wednesday.
Okay.
Right? So that was for 5 days later. So, right, that's fine. But I had said that I didn't need one. So when I rang to cancel that appointment, the nurse that I spoke to said, thanks for contacting us. We don't screen twice in the 1 year if the first scan is normal, which thankfully it was. So again, I outlined my concerns to her and she said she passed them on. So lo and behold, I'm in the car this morning and I hear Fiona Murphy basically directing the entire demographic of the country who the breath check serves, age 50 to 69. You know, yeah. Once you're in the system, everything will be fine and you will have your checks, even though we're missing our targets. But Cormac, to be honest with you, how do you know if you're in the system?
Well, I will tell you one thing. I'll tell you one thing, Joanne. I appreciate your call because thank you. Because there are obviously difficult. No system is perfect, we should say, first of all. But there are obviously.
Absolutely not. And to be fair, I just for completion, and I said this to Emily earlier, I went after I spoke to Emily, I checked cervical check, and everything seems to be fine there. The information is correct when my next mirror is due.
Okay.
So.
Okay, so systems in the HSE are working. You're ringing really to improve, to finesse the system that BreastCheck has, because there are obvious difficulties. In January, uploaded your details,
yeah.
And a half a year later, you couldn't be found in the register on the system. So
I'm not, and even this morning, I'm still not. I checked at 10:10 this morning, and I'm still not found on the database. So
okay.
Where am I?
Okay, so you're not on the system, Joanne.
If I've been registered on the phone and gotten an appointment by them by text message, and actually she did say that on the phone this morning, Fiona Murphy said, really important, give your mobile phone number because we are using text messages.
But well, there's another problem here, though.
Are there one system?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the two systems. Where am I?
And are they talking to each other as well? And there's another problem that I wanted to ask you about as well. If you weren't in such a lucky position, Joanne, to have a private appointment in June, half a year later, and it's the technician that said to you, by the way, don't forget the public system, so to speak, don't forget BreastCheck,
yeah.
You might not have known at all that you weren't on the system and BreastCheck.
No, I wouldn't have, to be honest with you, Cormac. And that was one of my initial concerns that I said to the lady on the phone back in June. I said, look, they do tell you on the website, and it's look, fair enough, you register at 50, you could be 52, 53 by the time you get your first check.
Yeah.
But if the system's not working and you're gone about your business having received a message on your screen telling you thank you for completing the form, and suddenly you're 53, Cormac, and you've heard nothing.
That's the problem, you see. I think that's why that's a value in your call, Joanne. Will you stay with me? Because it strikes me that there could be women listening to this programme, listening to you, Joanne, who think they have uploaded their details on the BreastCheck system, who might believe in their heart of hearts that they are registered and on the system and are waiting obediently for a call back or for an appointment or some sort.
And on that, Cormac, I have contacted a number of friends, and one of them I was speaking to this morning, and she has also registered a number of times online, both with her phone and her laptop, and is still getting the message that we were not found on the database.
And we certainly don't want to pile on what is an invaluable national screening service.
No, absolutely not.
Yeah.
But we've all come through, I don't even want to mention cervical check, but, we've come through enough in the last few years. And a separate issue from the women's health issue, Cormac, where's the information going? What's happening to all this personal information that's being updated on a government registered website?
Yeah.
On a register.
Because you have uploaded your details. That's a fair question. We've reached out, by the way, I should tell you, Joanne, to BreastCheck. Via the HSE, and we await their response.
So
your call, I must say, is invaluable. Stay with me if you don't mind, because we have other callers, 51551, if you want to get in on this. Jackie, good afternoon to you.
Hello, Cormac.
You're very welcome to the programme.
I was just listening to that lady there, but mine is a different story with BreastCheck. I had my mammogram end of July 2023, as every 2 years, because I was in the system. And normally you get a reply, a letter within 3 weeks. And I didn't hear anything in August. And at the end of August, friends of mine had got their letter and I said, they said, why don't you ring? And I kind of thought, well, yeah, when I will. And eventually, the beginning of September sometime, I rang and the lady on the phone just said, oh, you need an ultrasound, you know. And I said, well, I didn't get any information or letter. And she said, oh, it's been just busy over the summer. Short staff, the usual, but we'll make an appointment for you to come up immediately.
Okay.
So it's just when I heard that lady this morning saying she had her mammogram sometime earlier and she still hasn't heard, that, you know, you shouldn't have to follow up yourself. Like, I can't say if I would ever have got the letter, but I had breast cancer and I had to ring and find out my results.
So you were diagnosed with breast cancer, Jackie?
After that, when I was brought up, yeah. I didn't know.
When was this, can I ask you?
2023. Because it was every 2 years, and with COVID, it went to, mine went to 2 years, 7 months, which is fine. They had no screening during COVID. And my check was in July 2023. I hadn't heard anything at the end of August, the beginning of September, whether the mammogram was good or whatever. And I rang then to be told you need an ultrasound, which usually means they detect something. So from then, okay, I was seen and treated and everything and had to have chemo and radiotherapy and whatever. But I just feel, you know, would I have ever heard? And then I wouldn't have known because I had no lumps or anything. So it's just frightening.
It's frightening for you, Jackie, because am I right in saying you, as you say, you were diagnosed with cancer in 23, so you have a history of cancer. So
that's when it all came to light because I had to ring, let's check to find out. They were that behind in that time 2 years ago.
Okay. And then the 2 year checkups.
They weren't informing people.
The 2 yearly checkups are obviously of increased importance to you, am I right?
Well, that's why when I had my 2 yearly, it's my complaint is that they didn't give me the results. They send you a letter saying that you're okay, everything is fine, or they see something. I never got that letter.
Okay. And you need yearly.
Only I was worried.
You need an annual mammogram.
Now I do. Okay. And at this stage, I had mine last year in September, and this stage I'm due one in September, and I emailed off to see when it would be, and I've been told now it'll be pushed into the new year as they're way behind, and that's basically it.
I'm worried about the fact that you say you contacted BreastCheck and they said, oh, I'm sorry, you need an ultrasound, we didn't contact you, or I'm kind of paraphrasing here, we were extremely busy, but you need an ultrasound. Did you find that worrying at all?
Yeah, because that's when I only first heard that there was obviously going to be something wrong. I didn't know I had breast cancer.
And if you hadn't called them?
I don't know if I'd got a letter. That was 6 weeks after my mammogram. So usually within 3 weeks, and especially if there's something wrong, they should immediately contact you.
I wonder, are these... I mean, I'm sorry to hear that you were in this predicament, Jackie, but I wonder, in terms of the wider listenership and people I'm sure are listening, are these isolated cases or incidents? I mean, is there a problem with the communication system more generally that BreastCheck could look at, I wonder?
Well, I've said it because I've had problems getting appointments. Even when you have your checkup recently, they rang in July, the end of July, to say, could I cancel my checkup appointment because they were overbooked on the day. And I have a new one for September. But my previous experience was going up there for a 10 o'clock appointment and not being seen to 4 o'clock in the evening, with the doctors apologising, saying they were way overbooked.
Way overbooked. And they have acknowledged that they are trying, and they're struggling to keep up with demographic increases in population and so on. But they are looking for more people all the time to help with the service. I ask you this? We have more callers as well, Joanne and Jackie. You'll be interested to hear. But Jackie, did all of this cause you stress?
Yes, because I just felt that only my friend said to me, why don't you ring, because we've got our results. It was just like lucky they did it, because I wouldn't have rang. I would have just presumed, like, I didn't get a letter, maybe there's nothing wrong. And then after that, okay, everything took place. Mm. But I've had nothing but, like, trying to get the appointment now yearly should be very important after going through chemo and all. And now it's been told it's going to be, and it's not COVID, so it's been pushed out to the new year. But I would love to know when the date is, because I can't plan around that. If it came and you were away or something, do you lose your appointment, you know?
Well, you shouldn't, I suppose. You shouldn't. But I'm also conscious of the fact that when you say you were stressed, is it that kind of... If there's an uncertainty here in how the system is working, or you should, I suppose, feel reassured that there's a robust system, that even if you forgot your appointment, that the way other clinics or practices do, that they might send you a reminder the month beforehand and then a week beforehand and say, with a little text saying, don't forget your mammogram, it's at such a place, at such a time and such a date. But you might be waking up in the middle of the night wondering about your appointment with the stress of it.
Yeah.
Am I going to miss it?
Yeah. Yeah. And also the fact that, just more so the fact that didn't contact me saying there was something wrong. And that's where I'd be afraid for women out there, that if they've had their mammogram and they haven't heard and they just didn't after a couple of months, just ring up, because you shouldn't have to ring up to find the results.
Your warning, Jackie, is invaluable, no more than what I said to Joanne. Joanne and Jackie, you'll welcome Georgina to the programme. Georgina, good afternoon.
Hello there, how are you?
Not too bad at all, and thanks for calling the programme. Your point on breast check, please.
Well, it was when I got to be 50, I had a very good GP who was very kind of proactive, and she immediately said to go on the breast check register, and she also showed me how to do kind of self-examination. So she was kind of very kind of proactive and encouraged me to be the same. So I registered straight away, and then subsequently I checked that my details were correct, because I never kind of heard anything from them. And this was kind of just after or just around kind of COVID time, so you kind of anticipated some delays. Mm-hmm. But when 3 years had passed and I still hadn't been called, I actually contacted Breast Check in Vincent's, and they said, oh yeah, we can see you're in here in the system, but you haven't had a check. So they made me an appointment for the following week. They said, just come in. So I went and had that. I then got the letter afterwards saying everything was fine. And then I expected now that I was in the system and I'd hear something. But then another 3 years passed, and I had to ring them again and say, look, I'm surely due around now for something. I haven't heard anything. And they said, oh, yeah, we'll book you in. But I just felt like if you have to be proactive, because otherwise if you're relying on the system to contact you and remind you and book you an appointment, it doesn't seem to be doing that.
Oh my goodness gracious me, Georgina, you were proactive, but you were extremely patient as well. Are you telling me that 6 years went by? Did I get that right?
Well, I rang up after 3 years and I got a breast check.
Okay.
And that was fine. And then I thought, oh, now I'm in the system, they'll send me a reminder when I'm due. But then another kind of 3 years went by and I hadn't heard a thing. So I kind of contacted them and said, am I not due again?
Checkup,
and they said, oh, yes, and booked me in. But I never kind of had an automated kind of, you're due again, make an appointment.
The problem there is
your appointment.
6 years went by before they proactively contacted you, it seems. I mean, you contacted them after a patient 3 year wait initially.
But then I had to contact them after another 3 years. They didn't contact me after 6 years.
But once you did, so, I mean, the point in your and maybe this is the great value here in these conversations. Once you did contact Breast Check, Georgina, it moved swiftly. Yeah. You got an appointment. Am I right?
Very efficient. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And so the service itself, I can't fault.
Yes.
But there just seems to be some problem with their capturing of information on their register and translating that into an appointment.
There seems to be, I think it was Joanne, am I right, in saying they wanted to come back?
Yeah, Cormac, sorry. I suppose, look, you know, this is a valuable conversation, but are we not being told morning, noon and night, early detection is vital in terms of accessing treatment, in terms of survival, basically? And I think all of us have been proactive about our health, and I've no issue with that. I don't mind, you know, self-advocating for my own health. That, you know, I take responsibility for that. But I just feel like I don't trust the system based on what I've heard now just from two other ladies and my own experience.
You don't trust it like, based on your own experience?
No, how could you? Well, how could, like, listening to me and Jackie and Georgina and what they've both been through, especially Jackie, you know? Like, and again, even in relation to, we've missed targets. How can you set targets if the database isn't complete?
But can
because
I say,
it can't be. If everybody who's trying to register can't register.
Look, it's not for me to question your lack of trust or your trust in the system, but it is for me to put maybe balance, I suppose. And I know, Joanne, I know from the tone of your voice that you'll acknowledge.
It's just frustrating. I'm the first to say, look, nothing's perfect. Mm-hmm. Absolutely not. And also, when you do get in touch, the turnaround time is really quickly. It's really, really quick. But is that not putting extra pressure then? That, you know, like if you've to wait 3 years and then you have to follow up and then they're making an appointment for you. Are there other people, like Jackie said, her appointment was pushed back because they were overbooked. So what's going on there? Like, you know, is it a domino effect? Is it, you know, but I think the point of entry of information seems to be where there may be an issue.
Look, they are keen to point out, I suppose, as well, that I think in 2023, the breast check service performed over 166,000 breast checks, breast screenings. Now, and it's below the target, but that is still a whole lot of people who got screened. But I think any system surely depends on the efficient use of the information, the detail they get, in terms of refining who gets an appointment and when, and allocating resources behind all of that to make sure that the system runs smoothly. Your point is very valid, I must say, Joanne. Louise, good afternoon.
Hi, Cormac, how are you?
Not too bad. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Good, thanks. I was just explaining there to your researcher. So the same thing happened to me. So I'm 52 and I registered with breast check when I was 50. I was very aware that was the age to register. And I heard nothing and didn't think any more about it. And then maybe 6 months later, I said, that's strange, I haven't heard anything. So I re-registered. So when I went to re-register, it treats you as a new application. It doesn't tell you you're in our system already, just we'll be in touch, nothing like that.
Yeah.
So I entered in my PPS number, all my details again, heard nothing back. So in total, up to July of this year, which is 2025, I registered 3 times. And never heard anything back, nothing at all.
That's frustrating.
Then I phoned them, and I was put on hold and I was told, no, you're not in our system at all. There seems to be an error somewhere. It hasn't come through. We've no information for you at all.
What?
So I stressed then to the lady that I was very conscious and I was aware that I should have registered when I did. And it's now 2 years later. I explained there's a family history of cancer in the family. My mother and my aunt both died from breast cancer. So she wasn't concerned about that at all. She said, that's nothing to do with us. But she said, I'm in the system now. So I got a letter on July the 8th this year for a screening on the 10th of September.
Finally then.
So, yeah. So I was lost somewhere in the system. And I had been attending since my mother passed away the family history breast unit in St. James's Hospital. Mm-hmm. And every year I was given a mammogram. And then I think it might have been 10 years ago, I was told that the funding had stopped or there was some issue and I was being discharged from them. So I got my own private mammogram done maybe 3 years ago now. But I was completely, I vanished into their system as well.
Vanished. You vanished into their system. I love the way you put it, Louise. Yeah. I think it's pretty apt based on the cause. How many people, how many women in the country are listening to Louise and Georgina and Jackie and Joanne who have registered with Breast Check and have heard nothing? Who have re-registered with Breast Check and have heard nothing? Who have registered with Breast Check and believe they are on the system, but actually, based on these calls to Liveline, may not be. And that is the extremely worrying part, isn't it, Louise?
It's, well, yeah, it is, because you have faith in the system that, you know, you're panicking. Don't be, you know, stop contacting them or don't contact them, because surely, be to God, you're somewhere in there. And, OK, these things do take a while, or, you know, it does take time, but not to get an acknowledgement back. And, you know, we're all very busy as well, and these things aren't on your mind all the time. But, it's a service from the government for us women. And, you know, we're doing our end of things by applying and registering, even though we probably don't want to. But not to get an acknowledgement back and to be told very bluntly that there's an error in the system and I'm not on their database.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's where it's gone wrong. They need to come back to us and say, we have all your details, bear with us, or, you know, you've registered incorrectly, please do so again. But there's nothing from them at all, nothing.
Not even in writing, like the old snail mail?
No, I got nothing. I got no text, I got no email, I didn't get anything except for this letter I got in July for a mammogram 2 months later.
Okay. Can I read?
Even though I
just...
Yeah. This is... sorry, who's getting in there?
Just Georgina again, sorry.
Georgina, sorry.
To say that recently I kind of signed up for the blood donation service, and that is a system that runs really well. They have it on the system, they contact you promptly, they send you multiple reminders. So if they can do it, why can't these other systems work the same way?
Also, I mean, if there's one system in the HSE that is working extremely efficiently and effectively, I mean, why aren't those, I mean, forgive the corporate speak, but why aren't those learnings synchronised with other systems? I mean, it beggars belief, really. Can I read you this? Because Liveline sent a question to the HSE in relation to all of this, just in relation to one of you, the callers, who registered with BreastCheck, later searched for herself online on the register. There was no record of her. She rang BreastCheck about this, but is still not on the online system. Has BreastCheck received many complaints or calls in relation to problems with the register? Is what we asked of the HSE on foot of calls to 51551 liveline and rt.ie. The response from the HSE is this. BreastCheck, like many health services worldwide, is impacted by the global shortage of radiology staff, which has meant that we have not been able to increase our screening numbers to keep pace with the growing population. Despite these pressures, they say, we are expanding capacity, recruiting new consultants and radiographers, adding mobile units, upgrading our IT system and using new technology such as text reminders and the HSE Health app to make attending easier and reduce the number of women who don't attend their appointments. Our main message to all women of breast screening age is please attend their appointment when offered, or let us know if they can't attend. The HSE goes on to say, we're focusing on those at higher risk, those waiting longest, and women in communities who may find it harder to access screening, and we remain committed to working to maintain a regular screening cycle for all eligible women. And they say the uptake of rate of screening remains high. Can I get your response, though, Joanne, to that, since you're first in on this, on the programme today?
Yeah, look, I don't think they've answered the question, to be honest with you, because I didn't keep track of them, but I specifically asked the lady that I spoke to in June, is there anybody I can speak to directly about the issues in relation to IT, like that my information has been submitted a number of times, and where is it, and what's happening with it? I appreciate a short staff issue.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the point is being missed. It's not necessarily the service itself that's being rolled out, because, again, like most things, once you do get access, it seems to work very, very well.
Yeah.
My main concern is, as I said, how many of us, and I'm glad and relieved in a way to know I'm not the only one, or my friend isn't an only one, that we've registered. And as I think was it Georgina said, we've done our bit. We're playing ball. We're being told, you know, and we're being told regularly the statistics are 1 in 2 that are going to be faced with a cancer diagnosis. So screening is really important.
Mm.
And how can you ascertain who's at high risk or what area they'll find it hard to screen in
if the information isn't being uploaded from the system they're providing you with to upload your information.
Correct and right. And the problem is, what you said, they haven't answered the question. In many ways, I think you're right. When the HSE says in the statement, our main message to all women of breast screening age is please attend their appointment when offered, or let us know if they can't. Well, HSE, the women calling Liveline are saying, we have uploaded our details, but we don't know really, unless we check it ourselves or call BreastCheck, if we're on the register or not.
Mm-hmm. Incidentally, Cormac, when I did have the conversation, I was asked, had I received a letter to say that I had been registered? And I didn't receive a letter.
Are you supposed to receive a letter?
Well, this is another question, because nowhere on the registration page online does it say that you will receive a letter. So you have no way of verifying it other than to ring. And, you know, I think we've all been incredibly patient, and we've all accepted that it might take a while for databases to update and, you know, for information to be put through. But again, that's not due to a shortage of radiologists or radiographers.
But you see, the problem here is, if the system isn't working efficiently or effectively, people will have to become impatient. And BreastCheck will be inundated with calls. Yes. Am I on the register? Why haven't I got my appointment? Why haven't I heard from you? Why haven't I got the letter? I mean, we can't have that either, because then they're run over as it is in terms of workload. I mean, can I ask, Jackie, can you remember, folks, and 51551, when you uploaded your details to BreastCheck, did you receive confirmation via letter or anything else that you were on the register, on the system, Jackie?
Well, you see, I'm in my mid-60s, so I have already had mammograms, so I didn't need to register. That's going back a while. Okay. And so I haven't the same complaint as the ladies. But one thing I'd say is, if you try to get through to BreastCheck, they're not answering the phone either. They're so busy. I've often tried several times, and for other reasons, get an appointment, and they don't answer.
Jackie? I mean, is this an isolated few cases, or are you saying that this is par for the course?
No, I just emailed them now. I just emailed, because you don't get an answer. They're too busy, and I've seen when I've been sitting in BreastCheck waiting to see doctors that they can't answer the phone because of too many people coming in to check in. Mm-hmm. And but my query was the fact that I had cancer, and they didn't give me they never told me until I rang up. So that to me is a big worry. And like, whether you be in your 50s or your 60s, you know, that to not get your letter to say, look, we need to see you, there's something wrong.
Well, you're being extremely patient, all of you, I must say. I'm not so sure if it was me that I'd be as patient, but that's saying nothing really. But you don't know. Here's the query. Go on, Jackie, sorry.
The ladies were saying that, like, you know, it is administration, because when I kind of just got annoyed at several times, and the lady just, I said, I just feel like getting on the radio. She said, please do, because we can't do anything about it, and it's been brought up before and nothing has been done. But also, like, you have to fight your battle. I mean, I have cancer. I've had it. It's gone. But I can't get my yearly mammogram now. Even if you're on the system, do you trust the system? Because I'm a year, and I'll be a year and a half, and it's not COVID. So before they might see me, I don't know when. And they should check you every year after breast cancer.
Who said to you, Jackie, please get on the radio and complain about the service? We're not happy either.
Giving out to one of the secretaries,
Somebody in BreastCheck?
One of the doctor's secretaries, who was very nice. And I said, I'm not complaining to you now. I'm complaining, but I'm not giving out to you. I apologise. And she said, I completely understand.
Okay.
But when you've had cancer and you're waiting for your annual check, and now it's been pushed out for another 5 months, that's not good enough.
Yeah. So look at... Can I say to you all, I am so grateful to your call this afternoon, because if there are women listening who haven't heard from BreastCheck, who are over the age of 50, who have uploaded their details, please, please, for God's sake, check if you're on the register. Call them. and find out if you're due an appointment. This is what we're learning from you, the callers. If you're due an appointment, call them and check up that it's on the way. Stay on top of it, because it seems that the system, the breast check system, needs a little bit of refining. Joanne, Jackie, Georgina, Louise, and everybody else is calling 51551. Thank you.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1. 0818 715 815.
And simple as you like, 51551. Last week, we were talking career choice, and in particular, women who work in male-dominated jobs. But isn't it bizarre that as an island nation, we rarely think of the potential of a life at sea and all of the various jobs and professions that are available there? And the potential is amazing. Marie, you're very welcome to the programme. Good afternoon.
Thanks, Cormac. Thanks a million.
And I grew up in the Gaeltacht in Connemara, overlooking the Aran Islands. I could see the islands eating breakfast. Never once, Marie, did I consider a life at sea. What's wrong with us?
Yeah, well, I grew up in a dairy farm in Tipperary, Cormac, so I never considered a life at sea either, but ended up doing over 21 years involved in the Irish Navy. And now I do work with Bord Íosca Huaire, so I'm involved with the fishery side of careers at sea as well. So,
wow.
Yeah, I think, I don't know what it is, we turn our back to the sea in Ireland and we don't look at this massive opportunity that you know, for young people in Ireland and particularly young women to look at the opportunities at sea. I mean, you can work everywhere from, you know, 10 miles off the coast on a trawler to 100 miles off the coast or 200 miles on an Irish naval ship to mm-hmm. thousands of miles away from Ireland on, you know, a cruise ship off Florida or up in the Nordics or off the Mediterranean, a container vessel where you're transiting global shipping routes, you know, from the Far East to the Far West. And there's so many different opportunities for people at sea from every, I suppose what we don't realise is, one, how much of our trade actually comes into Ireland from the sea. Like the estimate's 96-97% of trade in Ireland comes in on ships. And I think we saw that in COVID when the supply chains broke down. Yeah, because we're an island at the edge of Europe. So we are an island. So most of our containerised material comes in on ships. So there's a huge amount of, I was saying to Annette earlier, a researcher, mm-hmm. like I think a lot of people don't realise there's actually a roundabout in Dublin Bay. So if you're at the Pool Beg or you're looking across Dublin Bay, you might notice sometimes merchant ships going around in a circle in the middle of the bay wondering what are they doing.
There's a roundabout in Dublin Bay. I never knew that.
Yeah, there's a roundabout in Dublin Bay.
Is it as bad as the roundabouts on land, Marie?
It can be like the Red Cow, the M50 there when it's very busy in Dublin
Stay
port.
Stay in your shipping lane, Captain.
Yeah.
But tell me this.
And there are rules of the road at sea as well, just like driving a car. So everyone has to stay on the right side at the right time and make your manoeuvres at the right time as well.
Okay, my God. So you went from Nina to the Navy. So you're a great example of a career at sea. How do you get into a life at sea? Or is that too generic a question?
You know, I think there are so many opportunities and people don't realise. So sometimes when I say about the Navy, straight away it'll be, oh, I don't want to be in the military. You know, I don't want that type of a world. But a vessel off the coast, you know, as I said, all those different opportunities. But you can go in, I suppose, if you think about a ship or a vessel, like a small town, because once you're deployed off the coast, you're it. There's no ringing 999 for the ambulance services or the fire brigade.
Yeah.
So on board the ship, there are certain qualifications everybody has to do. And you do them down in the National Maritime College of Ireland generally, or with some of the STCW qualified colleges around the coast. Mm-hmm. So basic things like firefighting. You have to be able to fight fire no matter what your job is on a ship, because when the alarm goes off, someone has to respond and you have to be trained. You know, you have to be able to do the sea survival. So everyone who goes out on a vessel has to train in sea survival skills. So if, God forbid, you know, something went wrong, you mm-hmm. have to abandon, or you have to, you know, keep yourself safe at sea and survive at sea. Because people do think a career at sea is dangerous, but what they forget is the amount of training that you do.
So what do you mean? What does sea survival mean or entail? Give us a broad outline.
Yeah, so like, you know, how do you don a life jacket properly? How do you abandon? So when you go onto the airplane and the air hostess is telling you all this, you know, instructional material about what happens if something goes wrong, you have to be able to do that yourself. So down in the National Maritime College in Ireland, and I'd say a lot of people don't realise we have this fabulous national asset, this, you know,
really high-tech, high-standard college where you have a big, huge sea survivals training set up with a big pool. So you walk in on the first day and it's like a swimming pool and you're, you know, putting on your life jacket. Yeah. It's lovely.
And
nice
and
easy. You step off the side.
Yeah.
And then by the end of your couple of days training, you know, all the windows are blacked out. The wind machine is going. The lights are flickering. You walk out of the change room and it's no longer a swimming pool. It's a full-on storm. And then you have to find your way in the dark, you know, get into the pool. You have to work together as a team. And
sweet
I think
mother
that's what
God
people
Marie.
Forget.
I don't want to do
yeah,
that.
But it's brilliant. Yeah, it's no, but I think what it is, you know, feel the fear and do it anyway.
Yeah.
I think, you know, when I was on the farm and if someone had told me, you know, this is what you're going to do for a living, I probably would have been horrified at that concept. But at the same time, when you're doing this training with your fellow mariners, so whether they're merchant sea people, whether they're Navy people, whether they're fishing on the trawlers,
yeah.
everyone does that standard. So there's a common language amongst seafarers and there's a common approach. And I think the great thing about careers at sea is, you know, you can train to be an engineer on the ship. You can train to be an electrician on the ship. You can train to be a chef on the ship. You can train to be a comms operative on the ship. All the ships need these skill sets.
Yeah.
And you can do 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years. And the great thing about it is when you come ashore, I think people sometimes rule out careers at sea because they think they're going to have to stay at sea for their whole life.
Yeah.
You know, you can come ashore and you've got this skill set of working on a ship, so you could be qualified as an apprentice. You know, you can be an electrician like the lady who won the Rose Tralee last
yeah.
week, but you're doing the electrician's job on a ship away at sea.
Wait, no.
The money's very good as well.
Okay, so hang on a second. You're bowling me over here. You had me at hello, as they say. But then basically what I'm hearing from you, Marie, is that for all of the Leaving Cert students who are awaiting offers right now from the CAO, you're basically telling them you can do anything almost on a ship. You can qualify, you can get various qualifications and so on the ship and see the world. And the pay is good. I mean, the pay can't be. I mean, how good is the pay?
Well, I suppose they're depending, like the defence, the Navy pay has increased dramatically in the last number of years because obviously we're trying to attract and the Navy is trying to, and as mariners, we're trying to get people to look at jobs at sea. And it is hard. I'm not going to lie. You know, you do leave your family at home and your friends and you miss out on some occasions and celebrations. So the job has to be great. It has to be interesting. The people you're working with have to be great colleagues and they become more than that because you work and live together on the ship. And, you know, you could be gone to sea for 2 weeks, 4 weeks, or if you're in the Merchant Navy, 6 months. So if you're in the Merchant Navy, when you go away to work away, if you're on one of those container ships or a bulk carrier, your pay then when you come home, you're on a different tax structure because you are spending 6 months away. So that means that your tax structure is different, which means it's a financial gain then. But then you have all this experience. And I think, you know, when I was talking to someone earlier on, they were saying about engineering and I was saying, I know engineers who served at sea on merchant ships and naval ships, and now they're, you know, top class engineers in Intel, because when Intel saw them coming into the room, they said, right, this person has the experience, but they've also worked in an environment where, you know, you have to find the solution to the problem. Like if something goes wrong in some of the systems on a ship and you're 500 miles off the coast, you've got to think outside the box. You've got to be a brilliant problem solver. You've got to be really good at communication.
And there's
really
no popping up the road, the N4,
no.
the M50 to find an expert. Yeah. You have to do it yourself. So tell me this. It's not for everyone, though, because having grown up by the sea, I know the sea is beautiful in summertime
yeah.
or in springtime. But by God, I don't want to be in the middle of the ocean when the waves are what, 20 feet high or whatever the case may be. So does it take a certain mentality, do you think, certain mindset?
I think, again, it depends on, you know, there's so many different options to be on that vessel. So if you go to sea and you're on a fishing trawler and you're in that kind of weather conditions, it's going to be really difficult physically and mentally to be in those kind of challenging weather conditions. But again, you work with people who have a lot of experience. You've done all your training. And the one thing is, if you've lived by the coast, Cormac, you know yourself, even the worst storms eventually blow themselves out. You might have to get through a couple of days of really bad weather, and then you can be in the most beautiful of settings with the dolphins and the whales and the bioluminescence in the nighttime. But if you're on one of the large container ships or if you're on a large cruise liner, you know, you're the size of your vessel means you'll experience the weather conditions differently, and also you'll be on different routes.
Okay.
So, you know, you'll get opportunities, you know, if you're picking your future career, you know, you might decide the cruise liners are a better option because the cruise industry has boomed post-COVID, which is probably a surprise.
Well, what I'm hearing from you
has.
What I'm hearing from you is that there are so many options. And how far along in the Navy did you go, can I ask you?
I was captain on one of the ships.
Okay.
So I went from small little girl from Tipperary on a farm to captain on board. So again, you can become a mariner. And I think that's the fabulous thing about the sea. You can learn so much from other people who have all this experience, and the sea is a great learning environment. Mm. And you know,
you're good enough, pure and simple.
And then when you come, and I think when I left the Navy, Cormac, I probably was a bit concerned about transferable skills, and you know, our language on ships is probably different. So our, you know, our ceilings, our bulkheads, our stairwells, our alleyways, we have stairwells. We have the galley is the kitchen, so we speak a different language, and you have to reacclimatise when you come ashore. But I probably was a bit concerned about transferable skills and experience. And then when you sit down with someone and you kind of tell them about all the different things you've done, then they're a bit like, wow.
And I think people are excited,
you know,
by difference as well, aren't they? People are excited by different experience, adventure, different stories away from the norm and so on. Would you stay with me, Marie? I think you've I think you've piqued interest, if I may say. 51551 Leaving Cert students, take note. Fiona, good afternoon to you. We were talking about women in male-dominated professions or jobs last week. Huge response to that. And you had a point to make there.
I did. Hi, Cormac. Hi, Marie. Yes, Fiona Murphy. And I'm just, I suppose, representing maybe Explore Engineering. And I heard one of the earlier shows, and just like what Marie has said, I suppose we just want to touch on the fact that there are so many different pathways and different avenues into engineering. That isn't maybe the traditional academic route that a lot of your listeners, maybe parents and maybe some students, might have that perception.
Okay.
And it's wonderful as well to hear Marie's story. And
the fact that you could become an engineer on a ship as well, be it naval ship or anything.
Yeah.
But so tell me, the normal pathway that people think of, am I right, Fiona, is you go to third level, a college or a university, and you become an engineer in the various programs. What other pathways are there?
I suppose there's a huge number of apprenticeships that are available now as well, Cormac, and they can either be through maybe some of the further education training boards, but also directly in with the companies. So a lot of the companies, say, I'm based in America, and here in around the Midwest region, we've got a huge amount of companies that are in medical device manufacturing, aerospace, component manufacturing, wind energy construction and robotics. And maybe I'll just touch on actually maybe Atlantic Aviation Group, who is a member of our Explore Engineering Showcase.
Mm-hmm.
And Atlantic Aviation, they're an aircraft maintenance company, and they offer aircraft maintenance technicians, 2-year apprenticeship programs, 2- and 3-year apprenticeship programs that you can actually go directly in, train, get your qualification, and you're earning while you learn, for want of a better word, and you're also receiving your qualification. And that can open up huge avenues, and they have female apprenticeships working in Atlantic Aviation as well.
Do you mean a quota specifically for females?
So I don't have their specific numbers now, because I suppose from Explore I'm talking about. Now, we do obviously still see that there is kind of quite low number of graduates. We're doing a huge amount of work to try and promote women in STEM and girls in engineering as well. But I think the most recent figures I have from Engineers Ireland in 2024 is that there was only 23% of female graduates in engineering.
Why is that, do you think?
Studies. You can't win a war overnight, really, I suppose, and it's a long process. We've been doing great work over the last number of years, and we've seen up to 70% increase in engineering graduates in our region. It's just that the female entry into the sector is taking a little bit of time. But I think it's really, really important that we hear from Marie and her story, and that Explore Engineering continues to actually really promote it.
Well, I think
Go
on and inspire.
Sorry. We hold an Inspire event in December. We traditionally hold it inside the University of Limerick, and it's for our female students in our TY, 5th year, 6th year, where we reach out to schools, we reach out to the guidance counsellors, and we actually bus in all the girls, and they get to hear from an industry panel of female engineers in the field as well. So that's just one of the ways that we're working to really try and promote
okay,
female.
I'll tell you, I'm fascinated by this because we're in that kind of nervous but fertile period for young minds before the CEO offers come out, I think, on Wednesday. So people are really nervous. But what I'm hearing from you is explore engineering. There are so many opportunities out there. And for Marie as well, consider a life at sea, be it through the Maritime College in Cork or the Irish Navy or through various companies and trawlers and so on. There is a world of opportunity out there on the sea and engineering, according to Fiona and Marie. Thank you very much indeed.
And it's right.
And you know what? We will certainly come back to this for others as well. If you want to tell us about a career that you mightn't think about initially or that intrigues people when you tell them that you're in that job. 51551.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1. 0818 715 815.
And 51551. So much thanks to the women who contacted the programme in relation to BreastCheck. And thanks to the HSE as well in relation to providing a statement and getting back to some of their queries. And just to underline, and the HSE want to point out that breast screening is for women who do not have symptoms. And screening is separate to services for women who have symptoms or a previous diagnosis, they say. And once a woman receives a cancer diagnosis, if she's due yearly mammograms, she receives them through the symptomatic services and not through BreastCheck. And BreastCheck is for women who do not have symptoms of breast cancer. I might come back to that before the end of the programme, given the response we've had. But that from the HSE. Now, the Sinn Féin leader, Mary Lou MacDonald, over the weekend mentioned it last week. The former leader of the SNP, Nicola Sturgeon, mentioned it. She said instinctively she'd be inclined towards a united Ireland. It's not long before the public has a say in if there is a united Ireland or not, according to Mary Lou MacDonald over the weekend. Patrick Murphy, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Cormac. Good afternoon to the listeners.
Would you vote for or against a united Ireland, Patrick?
Oh, I'm an Irishman, so Ireland is 32 counties. Yeah, I'd vote for an Irish Republic. Yeah, why not?
Ian Paisley Jr. would be described as an Irishman by many as well, and I'd say he'd vote differently.
Yeah, but he's not for United Ireland. He wants links to a foreign country and ruled by a foreign country, even though he is Stormont and we're meant to be co-ruling. But no, look, I grew up with the stories of Ireland and the history of Ireland. And yeah, I don't see anything wrong with that. We have a United Ireland rugby team and I would like to see a United Ireland football team. But I don't understand why anybody can't understand when you look at the map that Ireland is an island nation of Ireland. And why shouldn't we be united?
But we've had this situation for over 100 years. It's the political reality we have right now, I suppose, some people would say, Patrick. And why change it? Why change it now?
Well, they say, you know, humanity and the history of the planet is basically a blink in time. So I wouldn't say 100 years should quantify why we should keep it. I think Ireland was a united country long before that, for God knows how long. So I wouldn't pay any heed to that. Look, we know the history of why we were separated and what happened. And it was a foreign power that came in. We see countries united all over the world since then. We've seen Berlin look after the World War II and the coming down of the Berlin Wall.
Yeah.
Like, this is normality rather than the other way. It's not normal for a country to be colonized or to be giving their sovereignty over to another country in any shape or form. Look at the map. Look at Ireland and United Ireland.
Okay,
gives you 32 counties.
So what we have now is not normal. It's not normal to be colonised, you say. Stay with me, Patrick. Dennis, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Cormac.
Would you vote for a United Ireland, Dennis?
Absolutely not. It's aspirational, but realistically, is it a goer? Absolutely not.
Why?
If we look at 2025, as we have this conversation, right, we currently have a dreadful housing crisis. We dreadfully have a situation where the students who have just finished their leaving certs are now scrambling around to rent properties. We have a serious situation with the health service. I could go on and go on and go on. as far as I'm concerned, the bottom line here is we need to see the figures and see what the figures tell us. Now, if we can't sort out our own problems in the 26 counties, how are we going to sort out adding an extra six counties?
Okay,
to the bill?
So let's sort the South first before we move on to United Ireland. Stay with me, Dennis. Vincent, good afternoon. Would you vote for United Ireland, yes or no?
Well, sometimes I wouldn't answer a question yes or no, but I would say that the concept of a United Ireland is, you know, has so much baggage around it. But I would like to see the island of Ireland united politically and culturally, as we were in the Gaelic League, and when O. MacNeill, the head of the Irish Volunteers, was then head, and when Douglas Hyde, our first president, a Protestant, was head of the Gaelic League. Mm-hmm. At that time, all the books will tell you that we were a united country culturally and politically. So I think nowadays, the reality, and in fact, somebody mentioned 2025. Well, it's 100 years since 1925 when the Border Commission created the partition, or the Commission's report resulted in partition. Mm-hmm. But I think nowadays we do have to take on board the fact that it's not a matter of taking back six counties or looking for them. I think we could offer three counties of the province of Ulster to create the natural, cultural and historical province that it is. It's a nine-county province. I mean, Leinster has 12, Ulster is 9.
Yeah.
I don't know, Munster has 6 and Connacht has 5. So in a 32 federated Ireland, I think that would give people who feel disenfranchised in all counties of Ireland.
So am I right in saying, you're saying give them, give Ulster or the new entity that you create, Cavan, Donegal and Monaghan?
Yeah, that would create a more viable political entity, and would also give a chance to do what the men and women of 1916 wanted to do, to address the inequalities throughout the island.
Yeah. Give them over to where, Vincent?
Oh, well, it's not a matter so much as giving, so much as creating an Ireland united, united by hearts and by culture, mm-hmm. rather than that this is ours and that is theirs. I agree, it is one unit of land on an island, but I mean, I've travelled the world. That doesn't mean that a country has to be united.
Yeah.
We are geographic.
Dennis, you want to get in there?
Cormac, who's going to pick up the tab for this?
Well, in the 32 county federation, I think we've a better chance, and we have people like yourself who I'm sure would prepare to work for a future for the children of Ireland, rather than have the divisions or fight old battles.
Yeah,
I saw.
But who pays for it? Who pays for it is the point that Dennis is making.
Who pays for it?
Oh, the citizens of the federated country of 32 counties. Of course, we pay for it.
How do they pay for it?
I just said that.
How do they pay for it?
The money instead.
How do they pay for it?
Sorry, Cormac, can you come in?
No, hang on a second here. How do we pay for it is a point that Dennis is asking. Patrick, you want to get in? And if more in they come to 51551, I'll bring in more voices in just a second. But Patrick, who pays for all of this?
We pay for it. And we have a country that has so much money, we're putting in billions into rainy day funds. This is about management. We have a fantastic island nation surrounded by sea and water with riches. Of course we can pay for it. We are looked at the envy of Europe. One second, I didn't interrupt you. One second.
Sorry.
We are looked at it by Europe as being one of the most richest countries. We are bringing people in from all over the globe. Of course we could manage an extra six counties. We have an economy that we're told is booming. And then why can't we bring in the next six counties? That, to me, is a nonsensical argument.
Okay, Dennis.
We must wait until we're what? Richer before we can allow to bring back the six counties.
It's a nonsensical. You mentioned that it's a nonsensical argument. I guarantee you, when you put the figures in front of the Irish people, they will get a serious shock in terms of what this is going to cost. A serious shock.
Why? Year one cost, according to a recent study by DCU of a United Ireland, year one cost €3 billion, reaching break even within 9 years.
There you go.
I'd be quite honest about it. we have more problems down 26 counties that we need sorting out. It's as simple as that.
I know, but
this
you mentioned the cost.
This is an aspirational idea.
You mentioned the cost, Dennis. Is that too much to pay for United Ireland, do you think?
I'm just wondering how they've arrived at these figures. I'd love to scrutinise the figures.
Well, this is a comprehensive study by various experts in DCU, and you can find it easily online. I'll get one more voice in. I'll take a very quick break, though. Monica, are you for or against the United Ireland? And by the way, I'm asking it in a pointed way, because if there were to be a poll, it would possibly be a binary question, possibly. But Monica, for or against the United Ireland? It's in the ether. It's been in the news over the last few days.
Yes, well, thanks for having me on, Cormac. Well, I personally, all my life, had hoped for a United Ireland. But I really believe that we're nowhere near the possibility of having a United Ireland. Because we have a few points to think about. There's still far too much animosity from both sides of the coin of violence, too much intransigence, too much hatred between the coin of violence. Mm. And it doesn't matter what Sinn Féin says or Mary Lou says, there needs to be a meeting of minds regarding anthems, flags, before precious time and money.
Do you think, Monica, if there were to be a United Ireland, that you'd have to have a new flag and a new anthem, since you mentioned them?
Well now, really, Cormac, our flag, unfortunately, with the lovely meaning of it, has been weaponized, and quite a few people have said that it has been weaponized by Sinn Féin.
But the flag has a beautiful meaning, doesn't it? I mean, the green representing the nationalist Ireland, the orange representing orange or unionist culture, and the white of peace in the middle. I mean, you couldn't get a nice flag, could you?
Do you know, I agree with you entirely, Cormac, but unfortunately, that beautiful flag, representing what you said, has been weaponized.
So change the flag, you say?
Of course.
Okay.
Of course.
And change the anthem as well.
Well, now, really, what person would want to sing an anthem with the words of violence and hatred against them in it? I've always despised our anthem, I have to say.
Really?
The words, now,
La Gunny
Shleach
Fui Lovach Na Belaid. Shulev Connie Auron Naveen. I'm going to take a very quick break, Monica. 51551. Change the flag, change the anthem, yes or no to a United Ireland. Let me know.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1. 0818 715 815.
You're very welcome back to the programme. Should there be a United Ireland? The day will come soon, says Mary Lou MacDonald on the weekend, when the public will decide on the future of Ireland. Ben, you're very welcome to the programme. Am I right in saying that you're from a unionist background, but...
Yes, that's very much right.
Okay.
But I very much believe in Irish unity now being the best way forward for all of us across the island.
Really? Why?
Well, it's been a gradual process. I always felt Irish in addition to being British, but actually living in Britain for a number of years made me feel less British and more Irish. But it's also looking at... You know, growing up during the Troubles, I was determined that I wasn't going to be forced into United Ireland by violence. But the Good Friday Agreement changed all of that, allowed me to look at things differently. And then looking at the Scottish independence referendum and Brexit, that showed me that things really were changing, and that we'd be better coming together on this island as one country with the benefits. I mean, you look at Britain, we have the scenario where there's an increasing prospect of Nigel Farage being Prime Minister. And he is no friend of Ireland or the EU. And I think there's a real risk that he could call a border poll at short notice just to cause chaos. And that's why I think we really need to plan and prepare now so that we're ready for that.
My goodness. I'm fascinated by that, Ben, because the Good Friday Agreement in 98 gave you a political framework as a unionist to change your mind on your identity or develop your identity or decide your own future. For maybe the first time ever, would that be right?
Yes, that's right. I mean, and the beauty of the Good Friday Agreement was you could be Irish, British,
or
European, or all three. Mm-hmm. But Brexit changed that. Brexit put barriers in the way and forced us to choose, I believe. And that's why I think the best way forward is United Ireland. You look at Britain and the troubles they're having economically. David McWilliams has said they're likely to have to call in the IMF by the end of next year. And it's a place that's really struggling financially. And I take no pleasure in that. I have family and friends still living in Britain. And I think we can have better relations between the island of Britain and the island of Ireland once we have United Ireland, because then they can have the Brexit they want. Yeah. They can leave the European Convention on Human Rights, all that kind of stuff they want. But they must not interfere in our own ongoing peace process here on the island of Ireland.
Can I ask you this, though, Ben, since you're from a unionist background? Some historians say that Northern Ireland was designed to have a unionist majority. I mean, if there were to be a United Ireland, how would the unionist community regard being a minority in the new Ireland?
Well, that's absolutely right. The Northern Ireland state was designed to have a permanent unionist and Protestant majority, and it now has neither. And I think that is one of the reasons why we need to prepare now. But in terms of how we accommodate unionists into a new Ireland, for me, the key thing, it's about quality of life. It's about how do we get the best health service? And currently, Northern Ireland has the worst waiting lists anywhere in the UK. How do we get the best economy? We know that the Irish economy is doing much better than the UK economy is. It's about education. It's about the opportunity to be part of a stable democracy. And I think in many ways, Westminster has been a cold house for unionism, because we look at the deal that was put in place, the Brexit deal, even though the DUP were in a confidence supply agreement with the Conservatives. The Conservatives went over their heads and put in place a border down the Irish Sea, mm-hmm. which no unionist wanted to happen. And I think it's much better to bring unionism into the centre of Irish governance, into the centre of Irish society, and give them a say in how we run the island of Ireland through a government in Dublin or through being part of the Oireachtas in Dublin.
Okay.
And they're not going to get that in Westminster. They're only ever going to be a minority. Just one final point. Mm-hmm. If you look at unionism, hasn't been a member of the UK cabinet since the Second World War. So that's, 80 years? So it just shows that unionism has always been somewhat detached from British politics. Let's bring unionism and unionist people in fully into Irish politics and give them a better quality of life.
Even though for an awful lot of unionists, and I've spoken with them directly on air and off air on this, they feel very much oriented towards London and Westminster, and that's where their political and spiritual and soul heartland is, so to speak. Can I ask, Ben, go on, yeah?
I was just going to say, I think things are changing. I mean, I think there's a difference between political unionism, which is very much committed to being part of the UK, and civic unionism. I know from talking to a lot of friends who are from a similar background to me, brought up as unionists, brought up as British, mm-hmm. brought up, perhaps as some element of Protestant faith. But increasingly, people are looking at a different way forward, because we've been frustrated that the Good Friday Agreement helped to give us a peace dividend, but really the economic dividend has only been felt by the Republic of Ireland.
Well, it's a really intriguing view, I must say, Ben. I'll have to take a very quick break. Stay with me, 51551.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, 0818 715 815.
Huge response to this as well. Ben, from a unionist background, believes now that maybe the best way forward is a United Ireland. Sharon, you're very welcome to the programme.
Hi, how are you?
Not too bad. Do you agree with Ben?
Do you know, mine is purely selfish. I love Belfast. I love the culture. Mm. I love the people. I love the atmosphere. I would hate to lose that over any political agenda. I would miss it. I get out of Dublin to have a break, and there is nothing nicer in Belfast, and I hope we don't lose that, whatever happens.
But hang on a second, you wouldn't be, surely you'd be gaining it in a United Ireland. Are you for or against United Ireland?
It becomes part of our government, we lost. You know, I mean, I'm sorry, but let's say it as it is. No, don't touch it, leave it, it's great.
Sharon, are you saying, Sharon, that if we gained a United Ireland and had Belfast under our control, we'd muck it up, is that it?
Absolutely. I love it.
What do you love about Belfast?
When I go to have a break, it's just so different. I hope it doesn't change. I really do.
Really? Ben, have you ever heard that rationale before?
It's a new one on me. It really is. But I think what we're talking about here is a new Ireland where we celebrate all the diversity from across the island. And I think that's the best way forward. But there are real practical reasons why, if we come together as one country, we can do so much more together in economic terms. But even if you look at things like immigration, we can manage immigration much better if we have a united Ireland, because currently we have two states on the island with taking different approaches. We had a British Prime Minister, Rishi Sunak, who was boasting about the fact that because of the Rwanda scheme, people were bypassing the UK and going on the Republic of Ireland via Northern Ireland.
Okay.
Well, after we'll be able to control everything on the sea.
Well, can I say this? And I know I'm cutting across you, but time is against us. Thank you so much for your nuanced views.